Thank you for coming today. Our special gratitude to the devotees about between 40 and 50 devotees from mainland China have come to join us today. Let us offer our sincerest welcome by loudly chanting Hare Krishna. I'll speak for a few minutes, and then some of our devotees from China will explain to all of us the wonderful devotional activities taking place there. I just came from Kumbh Mela yesterday in Haridwar. Srila Prabhupada every year, every Kumbh Mela, he personally went. In fact, in 1971, he had just come to India just a couple months before with a few of his disciples from foreign countries, and in January of that year there was a Ard Kumbh Mela in Prayag, and Srila Prabhupada took them all there, where they did Nam Kirtan, Prasad distribution, Prabhupada was lecturing every day. And then in 1977, even though Srila Prabhupada's health was very difficult. In fact, it was the last year of his pastimes on this earth. Despite all inconvenience and the freezing cold there, he personally went to join his devotees at the Kumbh Mela in Prayag. Just to put that emphasis of the importance. So at this very moment in Haridwar, the Kumbh Mela is happening. Millions of people are gathered, all types of sadhus from all the different traditions are together. And Mother Ganga is flowing very mercifully. I will speak for just a few minutes about how the original Kumbh Mela, or the very origin of this festival. It's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto. And Krishna, he stages things in such a way to give the most crucial lessons to the world. Because in order to make spiritual progress, not only philosophy, but stories of how people follow the philosophy And also, stories of people who do not follow the philosophy of what happens. And when Krishna wants to speak to the whole world for all time through holy scriptures, he makes his lessons on such a grand scale with such powerful personalities that lesson remains. Yes? It's like if Aravind Patel from Borivali makes an opera to somebody, we're not going to talk about it 5,000 years later. But if it involves Indra and Durvasa Muni, it's big news forever. So Krishna stages things in a way that it will have longevity, the lesson. And Shukadeva Goswami, he had 7 days to speak to Parikshit Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj wanted the essence, the highest perfection. He was a fit candidate. For Parikshit Maharaj, there was no need of trying to gradually build a bridge to connect him to the path of Dharma. Parikshit Maharaj had darshan of Krishna when he was in the womb of his mother and saw Krishna save him. He witnessed how his mother, Uttara, was crying out to Krishna, "Please save my child. There's no way I can do anything to help him." When the Brahmastra was coming, and he had uncles like Arjuna, Yudhisthira, Bhima, grandfathers, yes? Very special person. And when he was cursed to die in 7 days, he had the most powerful armies on earth. He could have marched to Samigrishi's ashram, punished him for this misdeed of his son. But Parikshit Maharaj understood the will of the Lord. Today, we heard a question from Vajra Bihari Prabhu that if we're mistreated, should we tolerate it and forgive? Or should we clarify our position as being innocent? Or should we fight back? According to how we could best serve the interests of God, that's how a devotee decides. Bhima, he was a very, Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu asked the question, it's very tempting to be like Bhima. To fight, to eat, so many things. But actually, Bhima was a great Vaishnav. He was forgiving. He was self-controlled. But he did what he personally could do to best serve Krishna. Yes? Krishna wanted him to fight that battle. So he had to do the needful for that purpose. Yudhisthira was doing all the forgiving and everything, but it didn't work. And Bhima would have followed behind, but it didn't work. So he did what Krishna wanted him to do. When Draupadi was offended, Bhima was very upset. It wasn't an offense against him, it was offense against a great devotee, his own wife. But then we take his, what would you call it, nephew, Parikshit Maharaj. And he was cursed to die in 7 days. He didn't get angry. He didn't take revenge. Completely forgave the little child, Sringi, and his father, Samigrishi. Not only did he forgive them, but he accepted that he was at fault. He made a mistake. And he took it as the Lord's blessing to be cursed to die in 7 days. And because he did it this way, he staged the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he was simply doing what would be best for the interest of Krishna's desire to help the fallen souls in this world. So we find Parikshit Maharaj and Bhima Maharaj, they appear to be doing very different things, but actually they're one. They're both doing what would best serve the interest of the Supreme Lord. They were both like puppets surrendered to the will of Krishna. So when Sukadeva Goswami was under that banyan tree on the bank of Ganga, with Parikshit Maharaj hearing his questions and seeing his sincerity, he took the most important, essential histories, not only of this universe, but of a whole wide spectrum. Sukadeva Goswami was a self-realized soul. His father was Vyasadeva, who's Trikalagya. He took the essence of all knowledge and the histories that portrayed that best to teach people the path of how to attain pure devotional service. And it's very interesting how the Srimad Bhagavatam chronologically progresses. In the 8th canto, he elaborately explains the surrender of Gajendra, who was not a human, he was an elephant. And how he was big and he was strong and he was proud. He was the king of the jungle. Even the lions and tigers would offer all respects to him in fear. But in that situation, even though he was the biggest and the strongest of everyone, in this material world, whether you're a demigod or an elephant, or anything in between, or an insect, situations will come beyond our control. Material nature is so expert at getting us. Nothing could harm Gajendra, but when he was in the water, for those moments, and he wasn't in his own element, he was struck by a crocodile. Now on the land, Gajendra could have crushed that crocodile in moments. But in the water, the crocodile had an advantage over him. So it was very inconceivable. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time to be defeated. Otherwise, nothing could have harmed him. And please know that he was not living in, he was not living in the forests of Kerala. He was on a heavenly planet, very special place. But still, the crocodile got him. And he fought with all of his strength, with all of his might. But as time progressed, he understood there was nothing he could do. He was actually on the verge of death. He was about to die. And there was nothing he could do about it. It was a situation totally out of his control. Now this is extremely painful. Because when we come to this world, we want to be controllers. And when situations are painful, miserable, and totally out of our control, it's not only humiliating, it's miserable. But it was that situation in which Gajendra gave up his attachment to his elephant body and his elephant mentality and all the material possessions all around him, because he knew it was all going to be taken away in a second. And at that point, when he gave up this bodily conception, knowing it wasn't going to last, and he gave up all of his illusions that he was the proprietor and he was the controller and he was the provider, then he remembered his devotional activities from a past life. He was a devotee of Vishnu, and he learned many prayers. And he plucked a lotus flower and put it in the air and offered it to Krishna, and offered his prayers of love, prayers of surrender. And amazingly, Gajendra was not asking, please save me from this crocodile. Please save my life. His prayer was pure devotional service. I'm yours, my Lord. I offer my body, my words, my life, my everything to you. In the form of this lotus flower, I'm offering you my very life. Do what you like with it. I'm yours. And Krishna came down and saved him. But how he saved him is interesting. He didn't just save his life and tell him, now go back home. He saved his life and then gave him a spiritual body, put him on an airplane and sent him to Vaikuntha. It was real liberation. And then after this story, Shukadeva Goswami, he talks about different manvantaras, different manus, and different powerful beings who were administrating the universe. And he comes to the point of Ajita, who was an incarnation of Vishnu, who was born in this world. And with his help, the devas and the asuras churned the ocean of milk. And when the mountain Mandara started falling into the ocean, the Lord incarnated as Kurma avatar to balance it. And Parikshit Maharaj, he was so awake when he heard this. He wanted clarification. This is absolutely fascinating, churning an ocean of milk. Please tell me about this and how the Lord appeared as a giant turtle to help. And the story begins again with Indra. Now, when we talk about Indra, two things. We should, with great respect, because he's a deva. And his mistakes, when they're in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's serving the purpose of the Lord. So we should understand. If your mistakes were going to be recorded forever in Srimad Bhagavatam, then we would acknowledge your mistake as being something very holy. But they're not. So don't make mistakes. Indra could do it and spread the message of Sanatan Dharma and pure devotional service through his mistakes. Because ultimately he's Krishna's puppet. Krishna's using him. From a never perspective, you know, with the different manus changing, different people take the post of Indra. Yes? So the person who made this mistake is not the Indra of today, most likely. So don't worry about it. It's like if you criticize the President of the United States, I won't say anything about India here, but if you criticize five presidents ago, the present president doesn't really care. Because it's not about him, it's about somebody who was in his post who made some pretty serious mistakes. So Indra, power, wealth, prestige, riding on his elephant, and Durvasa Muni, renowned saint who owns nothing. Total difference between Indra and Durvasa. Durvasa is a sage that has no possessions, that travels around the world in the different places, just performing tapasya, teaching people about yoga. And Indra is the king of kings of the heavenly worlds. So Indra's on his elephant, and Durvasa Muni is standing on the ground. Now Durvasa Muni knows his powers, and he wants to bless Indra. So he takes a fragrant, beautiful garland off of his own neck and offers it to Indra. Sometimes when you have a lot and you really think yourself great, you cannot be grateful. If you're grateful, it's very unlikely that you'll ever make any serious offense to anyone. But if you're ungrateful, it's inevitable that you will. A grateful person thinks, I don't deserve anything. In fact, I deserve so many difficulties in my life. And if somebody does good for me, if somebody tries to help me, we feel so grateful to that person. And even if things go wrong, and we're put into a suffering situation, we're grateful. We're grateful that it could be worse, and it's only this, tateinukampam susimikshamano. Or we're grateful because it's an opportunity to turn to God. We're grateful because it's an opportunity to learn something. Whether we understand what we're supposed to learn or not, if we're grateful, the message is revealed to you. If we're not grateful, the message is never revealed to you. So gratitude means any situation. We're grateful to whatever comes in our life, even if they're the reactions to our own mistakes. We're grateful that God, through material energy or directly, whichever way, is trying to rectify from making these mistakes in the future. And if we've done nothing wrong and still some things are coming on me, at least that's what it appears. Even if we cannot understand specifically why, we're grateful because we have faith in the goodness of Krishna. We have faith that if we turn to Krishna, that's the real success in any situation. Success isn't how things turn out in this world. Success is how we turn to Krishna in the process. Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, they had 8 daughters and each of them died immediately after birth. Now anyone who is a mother knows how painful that must be. You're carrying a child in your womb for 9 months. And you love this child, you want to serve this child, you have no children at all, and you're yearning to have a child, and then it dies. You see it, it's so beautiful, and it dies. 8 in a row, at Sachi Mata and Jagannath Mishra, with each time they continuously increase their love and devotion to Krishna. They weren't grateful that the child died, but they were grateful for the opportunity to love Krishna, to serve Krishna, to surrender to Krishna, even in that most sad situation. Then they had a son, but he soon left home and took sannyas. Very difficult life. And when Krishna, in the mood of Radha, entered into the womb of Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Devi, he remained in the womb for about 13 months. Hare Krishna. Now, for you brahmacharis, you don't understand what this means. That's a long time. That's almost 1.5 times a pregnancy. So everything was happening and they were grateful. And the result, Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu became their son. They were really grateful. But then he took sannyas and left them. So through these beautiful incidences, we understand what gratitude really is. To see the opportunity. But when we become proud, we cannot be grateful. Actual gratitude is a symptom of humility. Trinadapi sunichena taro ibasi hishnuna amani namane dena kirtaniya sadahari. To be humble like grass, tolerant like tree, offer all respect to others and expect none in return. That is the formula by which one could truly take shelter of God through his holy names. Because when we're humble, we can actually be grateful. Because when we're humble, we think, I don't deserve anything. Whatever apparently good or bad is coming, I'm grateful for the chance. It's a gift of God. And I know what to do in this situation. To bow one's head and turn to God with love. That is gratitude. Queen Kunti prays, Janmaishwarayashruti shirbir edamana madapuman naivarhat yivadatum vaitvam akinchana gocharam. That those who have material opulences, especially wealth, beauty, education, and prestige, which may come from a high birth or whatever, such persons, the tendency is they become proud of their beauty or their knowledge or their strength or their wealth or their fame. They can't be grateful. They can't cry out the name of the Lord with feeling. So here is Indra. He's beautiful. He has unbelievable wealth. He's incredibly intelligent and highly educated. He's very famous, very high birth. So Durvasa Muni, this little yogi with matted hair, just walking along the street, gives him a garland. Indra gets garlands all the time. Yes? It's interesting. Somebody that comes from the West, when they come to our temple, not a devotee person, but just an ordinary person, you give them a garland and they're absolutely thrilled. They never got a garland before. Really, they're thrilled. They're just so, they put it in their little plastic bags and save it to show everyone at home, and they have people take photos of them and they show all their friends, you see, they put a garland on me. I wore a garland. They gave me a garland. It's something very special and new. But when you become a Swami like Chandramali Swami, everywhere you go, people are smothering your face with garlands. Yes, and you're just taking them off and taking them off and saying, I wish they stopped giving garlands. So we take things for granted. We take great things for granted. Now, a great personality doesn't even take the simplest things for granted. Srila Prabhupada was like that. If anyone did anything to assist him at any time in the mission of his Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada would never forget that. He was so grateful. Whether he was just coming off the Jaladuta and he had nothing, or whether he was flying in jet planes around the world 13 times with hundreds of devotees waiting for him wherever he went, whether he was staying with the poorest people of America in the Bowery, or whether he was living in beautiful palaces in his temples, Prabhupada was the same. He was grateful for even the simplest thing, whether it be a flower offered or just the enthusiasm of a devotee's service. So here we find Indra, because he was proud, he couldn't appreciate the simple gesture of being given a garland. Yes? And therefore, instead of seeing the blessing, he just saw it as something very ordinary. This is a very, very critical lesson for all of us. Everything in Krishna consciousness is a divine blessing of the Lord. And how much we deprive ourselves if we take it to be something ordinary. Every time we sit down to chant the holy names, every time we hear from a Vaishnav speaking, every time we open the Srimad Bhagavatam to read Prabhupada's purports, every time we come before the deity, every time we receive prasad, we are receiving divine blessings. Factually, it may have taken us millions of births of being born, struggling, and dying until we finally get these blessings. It's not ordinary. It's very rare. Any connection to bhakti is the rarest thing. But we benefit to the degree we're actually really grateful for it. Because when we're grateful, we're going to acknowledge it and we're going to respect it. We're going to reciprocate with Krishna and with his devotees for giving it. But for Indra, it was just another flower garland. The Apsaras, the Gandharvas, the Siddhas, the Janaras, they're all giving him garlands all the time. Here's another one. So he didn't see the beauty of God's grace in this garland. He wasn't grateful. What did he do with it? He recklessly, carelessly just threw it on the trunk of the elephant. Now, elephants, we just read about Gajendra just before. Very interesting, because we're two elephant stories, one after another. Now, if Indra was riding on Gajendra before the crocodile, Gajendra probably would have done the same thing. Yes? It's interesting, because When Gajendra was in the mouth of the crocodile, please listen carefully because this is an interesting point. When Gajendra was in the mouth of the crocodile, he plucked a lotus flower and offered that flower with love and devotion from the heart of his heart's hearts to Krishna. Yes? Because he was totally humbled. He was grateful for the chance. Before I die, I'm offering my life to you, my Lord. Thank you. Now here is a whole garland of flowers. And they were probably every bit as nice as that lotus flower Gajendra offered. And this elephant, because he wasn't in the jaws of a crocodile, he was strutting around with the king of heaven on his back. Very prestigious position for the elephant too. He wasn't grateful either. He didn't understand the value. Sometimes, unless we're really in desperation, we don't understand the value of something. Necessity helps us to understand something's value. An example. If you're bathing in the Ganga and you open your mouth and somehow or other Ganga just fills your stomach, yes? And you just drink way, way more than you have the capacity to drink. And then you come out of the Ganga and you're like, you're going through all sorts of physical difficulties, and someone offers you a glass of water. How much will that water have value for you? Depending on who you are, you may just throw it down, or you may just say, well, later, later, later. It has no value for you because there's no necessity. But what if you just do Nirjal Ekadasi? And while you're doing Nirjal Ekadasi on that day, you do a full Govardhan Parikrama. And it's the month of June before the rains when it's at the hottest point. Yes? And somebody offers you a glass of water. What is the value that that glass of water has for you at that point? It has incredible, it has life-saving value because of necessity. A humble person always feels necessity. A proud person is full. Yes. I don't know how you say it in India, but in America, if somebody's really proud, they say you're full of it. I'm not going to say what the it is, but you're full of yourself. You're just full of yourself. And therefore, you can't really appreciate anything of anyone, really, from your heart. You can't be grateful because you're just filled with yourself. But a humble person, it's like you're empty inside. And when you're empty of your ego, when your ego is empty, then you can actually be hungry. You're starving for blessings. You're starving for mercy. You're starving for service. You're starving for Krishna. That is a blessing. Then, whatever blessing, whatever mercy has, we recognize its value. And we're grateful that we're receiving it, and we reciprocate with a thankful heart. So for Indra, it's just another garland. For the elephant, didn't mean anything. He took that garland and threw it between his legs. And being between his legs, the legs came together as he was walking and crushed, smash the garland. And then the garland fell to the ground, all smashed on the street side. Durvas Muni. Krishna uses him too. Krishna uses Indra to teach lessons to the world through his pride. And he uses Durvas Muni, he gets Durvas Muni to dovetail his propensities to teach the world through anger. So Durvasaji, he was angry. But he was angry for a good purpose. Because you are so proud, you have so much, you think you're so great, that you're not honoring the Mahaprasad of a saint, I curse you and your entire dynasty of everyone around you, including all the demigods, to fall into total poverty. Arivo. Now, Queen Kunti said, Akinchana Gocharam. That means it takes one who is in poverty to cry out the name of Krishna. Now, poverty doesn't mean necessarily that you lose everything you have in this world. Because even people could lose everything they have in this world and still be proud. That means it's not bona fide poverty. Real poverty means that we're no longer thinking in terms of I and mine. King Prataparudra, he was the king of Orissa, but he was a Kinchana Gocharam because he understood everything belongs to Krishna and he wanted to use everything in Krishna's service. Yudhisthira Maharaj and his brothers, they were in poverty when they were living in the forest for 12 years. But then they were made the kings of the world. But for them, they were still a Kinchana Gocharam because they didn't consider anything to be their own. It's Krishna's children. It's Krishna's wealth. It's Krishna's position. It's Krishna's power. I'm just servant of the servant of the servant in whatever situation. And we're grateful for whatever situation because there's always service. And there's always a chance to turn to Krishna and chant his holy names. Asuras took advantage of the situation and attacked. And the Devatas, they tried fighting, but it was impossible. And all they could do is run away and hide. Now, this is really an embarrassment. In front of their wives and their children and their subjects, they're running away and hiding. They lost everything. But what did they do? First, they tried their best, but it was totally out of their control. I've seen devotees, you know, who had their problems, had their issues, but then they got some incurable disease. Or some situation of health where everything's totally out of your control. There's just nothing you can do. You're suffering. You may die. You're like Gajendra in the clutches of the crocodile of disease or some other complication. And it's amazing how such sincere souls, they grow spiritually like never before because they recognize their humble position. They take shelter of the Lord. They pray to the Lord. And we have seen people become perfect in that situation, where they honestly accept the fact, not just in theory, but in realization, I am not the controller. There's forces beyond me. I desperately need the help of Krishna. So the demigods were understanding this. And they all went to Lord Brahma. They went to his assembly place and told him their situation. And because we cannot approach God directly, we can approach God, but it has to be through the blessings and the mercy of those persons who love God. Even the demigods follow this. They always go to Lord Brahma, who's the guru of all the demigods. And Lord Brahma doesn't take credit for anything. Lord Brahma understands. He's above all this. He doesn't lose anything, but he understands it's only by Vishnu's mercy that can be helped. All these different avatars that come, Ram, Krishna, Varaha. Brahma prays to Krishna to come and save them. This is Guru. Guru doesn't take the credit. Guru just tries to connect the devotees to Krishna by petitioning Krishna's mercy and blessings upon these people. So he took them all to the ocean of milk, and there Brahma prayed with all the rest of them. And Krishna gave them good lesson. Now, we're almost out of time for my talk because we want the China devotees to speak. But as far as Kumbh Mela goes, interestingly, on the subject of elephants, I was going to take bath in Mother Ganga in Haridwar, and there was a procession. And it was an amazing procession of these sadhus. And one particular, you know, the guru was on an elephant. Huge elephant. And he was sitting on the elephant. And he had matted hair. And his matted hair, he had it come out like this. So he was sitting on top of the elephant in a nice seat. And his hair was so long that it practically went all the way down below the body of the elephant on both sides. It must have been, I would estimate his hair was, he was probably about 5 feet tall. Maybe 5 foot five, like me. But his hair was probably 8 feet long. Because it went down from his head, across his whole body, and then all the way down practically to the belly, to the bottom of the belly of the elephant on both sides. It's actually quite nice to see. And there was bands playing and dancers dancing and singers singing. And meanwhile, he was going on the elephant. And behind him were his disciples. They were all sadhus. And they had ashes on their bodies and long matted hair. And they were all riding on camels. And each one had a particular weapon they were carrying, tridents and other swords. It was interesting because because camels are not that easy to ride, actually. They're on the back of a camel, and one is carrying this big trident, and at the same time the camel's moving, and people are throwing garlands and flowers on all of them, and then they're trying to smoke ganja. I was afraid he would fall off the camel. Either due to intoxication or just the logistics of doing all these things at the same time. But it obviously was an important thing for him. It was quite incredible. And all the government agents and all the government people and all of, there were thousands of people offering garlands to all of them as they were going down the road. And every half a block, people were coming out with these nice mango lassi drinks and everything to give. So it was quite nice procession, actually. But he was on an elephant. So, Vishnu, he speaks to the devas. And when Vishnu wants to help you, he does it in a way that you actually become self-realized if you just take advantage of the opportunity he's giving. Vishnu could have just, he's in the hearts of all the asuras, yes, he's the Paramatma. He could have just taken his Sudarshan chakra from within their hearts and just go, psh, and all the asuras are gone. But that wouldn't have been so exciting or instructive. So he said, make truce with them for the higher cause of getting nectar. And this was very interesting. Because however much we are different from each other, we can unite for the higher principle. That's what the Sankirtan movement is, uniting for the higher principle. Now, for them, the higher principle was their own personal sense gratification for the asuras. But for devotees, we can put aside all of our superficial differences for the higher principle of pleasing Krishna. Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam, the ultimate goal of all of our activities is to please Krishna, to please Srila Prabhupada. And in doing so, to become liberated from our own egos and love Krishna. So for the purpose of nectar, they united to churn this ocean. And then it's a long story. We discuss it many times. We're all united for the purpose of the nectar of devotion. Yes? Bhakti rasa amrita, sindhu. This nectar is not just coming from an ocean, it is an ocean. That's what Prabhupada came to give us, the nectar of devotion on behalf of Rupa Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we are united to get that nectar and to spread that nectar. But it doesn't come easy. So many difficulties they were going through. They couldn't lift the mountain, then the mountain started sinking, then the mountain started shaking, then fire started burning them. Long efforts, and Krishna was right there to help them at every stage whenever they turned. And finally they started. Finally, after all this hard work and risking their lives and troubles and problems just to get the churning situation established, then they start churning. Whew, it's actually working now. Whew, whew. And what comes out? Poison. Lord Shiva drinks the poison to show the ultimate service of the Lord is to show compassion to others, even if it means taking sacrifices and risks to oneself. And then so many temptations. Horse comes out, elephant comes out, jewels come out, Surabhis come out, Lakshmi comes out, Krishna warned them, anything bad comes out, don't be distracted by that. And anything good comes out, don't be tempted and diverted from the path. Just keep churning. Keep your mind focused on the nectar. As we're churning our hearts through chanting Hare Krishna and following the path of bhakti, sometimes very difficult obstacles like poison comes. We cannot be disoriented. We cannot give up our hope. We have to keep focused on our goal. And other times, wonderful temptations and opportunities can come that can divert us from the path. We have to keep focused. And in order for that focus to be real, we need to perform our sadhana sincerely every day, and we need very, very good association. Without good association, good hearing and chanting God's names, reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we can easily get diverted, either by the difficulties or by the charming opportunities that we get. They'll all come. We need to help each other keep our focus on the goal, pure love of God, and not stop with anything else. And eventually, Dhanvantari came out with a golden pot of amrita. Just what they wanted. The demigods were so happy to see the Lord come out with this. But after all that work, all that trouble, the devas took it all away. Another test. We trusted Krishna. And now they have it all, and they're going to drink it all, and things are going to be worse. But devotees never give up their faith or hope. Srila Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. Whatever the impediment, whatever the difficulty, if we just are happy knowing that Krishna is all-powerful and Krishna is all-merciful, and I give my life to Krishna, whatever may happen, let it be, I'm with you, Krishna. I'm for you, Krishna. As the servant of the servant of the servant, we have nothing to fear. It was an impossible situation until Mohini Murti appeared. She made the impossible possible. Through her powers, the asuras willingly gave all the nectar to her, and she gave it all to the demigods. And then she took her form of Vishnu and flew away. But then the asuras were really angry because they knew they got cheated. And they started another war. And Jayanta, according to Skanda Purana, the son of Indra, he took that pot of nectar during this 12-day war, and in different places he hid it. In Prayag, he would hide it in these different places at different intervals, at Prayag, Haridwar, Ujjain, and Nasik. And in each of these 12, and in each of these four places, every 12 years, this Amrit emerges with its full potency. And according to what people want, Krishna reciprocates. If you go with real faith, and you faith in this nectar, faith in the Ganga, faith in the Kumbh Mela, and with this real faith you go because you want something material, then you'll be blessed to get that material blessing. If you want mystic cities, like many of the yogis, they will get mystic cities. If you want liberation, if you're a Brahmavad, then you'll get liberation. If you want pure devotional service, then you will be enriched and the doors will open wider and there'll be more support and more facility given to you by the blessings of that to achieve pure devotional service. So many different people are going out of the 20 billion people that go. People are asking for different things. See, the Ganga has three forms, according to Sripad Vallabhacharya. There's the form of the Ganga of water. And on the earthly plane, you know, the water's there. And she's nourishing the crops. She's giving bathing water. She's giving drinking water. She's giving so many gifts to human society in the form of water. But also Ganga is a place of pilgrimage. And people who have faith in Ganga in this way can access her blessing as a place of pilgrimage where they can get these different things. Some people want good husband or good wife, or if they already have a wife or husband, they want them to be good. That's a more difficult thing to ask Mother Ganga. Make my husband or my wife the way I want them to be. Or they want to pass their exams, or they want their business to go better, or they want to win an election. So many things. People are going to bathe in the Ganga with some faith. Others want powers, mysticism. Others, they want love of God. So Ganga appears as a holy place of pilgrimage. And then the third aspect of Ganga is she is the divine goddess, an expansion of the pleasure potency of the Supreme Lord. And if we love her as a person and have faith and worship her as a person, then she could give pure bhakti. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what was his faith in Mother Ganga? Should I continue?
No!
It is explained in Chaitanya Bhagavat that Ganga Devi, the goddess, the divine personality of Ganga, who presides over the Ganga, who's non-different than her water and who's non-different than her being the place of pilgrimage to remove our sins. Ganga Devi is thinking that Yamunamayi is such wonderful service. The gopas are bathing in her, and Krishna and Balaram are bathing in her, and they're bringing the cows and the calves and the bulls to drink her waters, and they're having all sorts of water sports in Ganga, and she's supplying such beautiful, beautiful arrangements. Yashoda Mayi is bathing Krishna in the Yamuna. Nanda Maharaj is taking baths in the Yamuna. And Krishna and all his friends are having their most intimate, loving leelas. And the gopis, Krishna's standing on the bank of the Yamuna playing his flute, and Yamuna's stopping her waters and bringing him lotus flowers. And then on the banks of the Yamuna, the gopis are having Ras Leela with Krishna, and she's offering soothing, soothing breezes for the pleasure of Krishna and Radharani and gopis. And then in the Ras Leela, Krishna takes Radharani and all the gopis in the Yamuna, and they're laughing together and playing together and hiding behind lotus flowers together, and Yamuna is just serving. All she does is serve. Facilitate loves, to facilitate pastimes. Ganga was not envious. Ganga was not jealous. Ganga was just so much happy to see the good fortune of Yamuna, but was longing that she could do that service too. So she did tapasya. And Krishna gave her the blessing in Kali Yuga. Radha and Krishna, Radha Krishna will appear as Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Radha Bhava Duti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. And perform the same Braja Leela in Navadweep. And you will be there to assist in every way. And how she assisted? In every way. When Gauranga Mahaprabhu decided to appear, he chose to do it during an eclipse where everyone was in the Ganga. And in those days, for the whole duration of the eclipse, everyone stood in the Ganga and loudly chanted the holy name. And Nimai, when he was a little boy, his mother would make all nice arrangements for him to bathe in Ganga. And when he was a student, practically for a major portion of the day, Nimai and his students would just play in the Ganga. They'd splash everyone and spit water in the faces of Brahmins who were trying to do their Gayatris. So many pastimes, just playing in the Ganga, almost all day, Nimai and his friends, just like Krishna and the Gopas. In fact, they were Krishna and the Gopas. And Keshav Kashmiri, what was Nimai's love and faith in Ganga? Three times a day, he would bow down to her, worship her, honor her. He was teaching us what devotion is. And when Keshav Kashmiri came, we saw the drama, Adi Keshav Prabhu. He appeared. And little Charuni was Nimai. And Nimai said, oh, you are the greatest of all pundits. Gada Saraswati appears on your tongue every time you speak. Please compose verses in glorification of Mother Ganga. And Keshav Kashmiri, like the raging wind, composed instantly 100 verses glorifying Ganga Devi. And it was there on the bank of the Ganga that Nimai liberated his soul. How? By taking away his ego. So that he could be humble and grateful and then receive the mercy. Very systematic science. And Mahaprabhu, he inaugurated the Sankirtan movement on the bank of Ganga. And he took sannyas at Katwa on the bank of the Ganga, bathed in Ganga. And then when he took sannyas and he went to Puri, according to Vrindavan Das Thakur, Mother Ganga was so eager to continue assisting Lord Chaitanya because he was bathing in her at least three times every day. Sometimes he'd be in her most of the day. And she was just doing seva, offering her life for the pleasure of the Lord and his devotees. But now he's living in Puri. So Ganga was flowing very fast from Navadweep to merge into the sea. At Ganga Sagar, she merges into the sea, and then she rushed, her waters rushed to Puri, because Lord Chaitanya was bathing in the sea three times a day, and she was there assisting Samudra in facilitating the happiness of Lord Chaitanya and his devotees, bathing Haridas Thakur's body in so many wonderful pastimes. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided to go to Bengal, what did he say? He said, I come in two forms in this age of Kali. As wood and as water. As wood I am Lord Jagannath, and as water I am Mother Ganga, who have come to deliver the fallen souls of their sins and
give love for Krishna.
And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was walking, he said, I'm going to Bengal. Lord Chaitanya said at one point, I'm going to Bengal for two reasons. To see my mother, Sachi, and my mother, Ganga. And as he was on his way, when he came close to the Ganga, he started glorifying anyone who bathes in Ganga, touches the Ganga, drinks Ganga, sees Ganga, or anyone who is touched by a breeze that has come from the Ganga will get Krishna prema, love for Krishna. Now, is this an exaggeration? No. But we have to be receptive. That blessing is there, but we have to be receptive to benefit. It's like, for those of you who have Ayurvedic doctors, recently one doctor, Ayurvedic doctor, wanted to give me some medicine. So he told me I have to do some sort of a panchakarma. By doing that panchakarma, an abbreviated version, he said that will facilitate the ability to digest and assimilate the medicine. Otherwise, even the best medicine, if you can't digest it and assimilate it, it has minimal benefit to you. To the degree you have the power to assimilate a medicine, it actually takes effect. So to the degree we are humble, to the degree we are grateful, to the degree we really, really deeply have a service attitude, to the degree we really have faith, then yes, just the breeze of the Ganga can awaken love of God with us if we have the receptivity to digest that blessing. If you eat a Anakuta Govardhan Puja feast, and you're laying on your left side wishing you hadn't eaten so much, and someone comes with a big, gigantic gulab jamun and says, please take this, what will you do? We will go, you have no power. But if you're really hungry, then you could really appreciate it and you could assimilate it. You can digest it. So similarly, that humility, that gratitude, that service attitude gives us a hunger for Krishna prema. A hunger for service, a hunger to chant God's names. And then when we chant Krishna's names, when we take bath in the Ganga, when we associate with holy people, we get proportionate effects. Thank you very much. Devotees are so nice. Even disturbance make devotees happy. So this is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appreciation of Mother Ganga. But Narottam Das Thakur, in one song, he explains, that by bathing hundreds of times in the Ganga, one could be purified of sins, and eventually love of God could awaken. But just by seeing a pure Vaishnav, the same effect is achieved. Because devotees of the Lord, they are holy places personified. And Srila Prabhupada explained in regard to Kumbh Mela, people come to bathe in the Ganga, but because they don't have proper understanding, they don't have proper gratitude, they don't have proper conception of what the purpose of life is. They take their bath in the Ganga, but they don't really benefit very much. Therefore, the real purpose of going on pilgrimage, whether it's Kumbh Mela, or going to Vrindavan or Navadvip, is to associate with holy people. Because the Ganga of the Hari Katha that is coming from their mouths, the Ganga of the blessings that are coming from their hearts, is the most valuable, priceless of all blessings. And Prabhupada would quote Vedavyas, that those who go to the holy place just to bathe in the river without associating and seeking out saintly people, this is a symptom of Kali. Yes, Ganga is all merciful, but without the blessings of saintly people and learning from them, we cannot access that blessing. And the most powerful current of grace in this age of Kali is Krishna's holy names. Kalera dosanide rajan asti heka bahadguna kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha paramraje. This Kali is an ocean of faults, but there is a benediction. If we just grateful to receive the instruction of Srila Prabhupada, he has given us this ultimate benediction. Simply chanting the holy names of the Lord, the result of following every other possible devotional activity. Aho bata swapa chotogariyam. Kapila Dev explains, even if you're born in a family of chandala, the lowest birth by social standards. If one is chanting the holy names, that means one has gone to all holy places, bathed in all the holy rivers many, many, many millions of times, has studied all the Vedas, have done all kinds of yajñas. The same result is there in this age of Kali. By simply serving the Vaishnavas and sincerely crying out Krishna's holy name. So, these are a few thoughts about Kumbh Mela. And Sri Dama Prabhu, can you? Can you introduce the devotees from China and ask them to come up?
Hare Krishna. So, as part of our service to our beloved Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada wanted the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to go to every nook and corner of the world. And he did most of the job, but he left a few of the places, one specific place exclusively for his disciples, where he personally did not go himself. He left this place exclusively for his disciples to inundate with the holy name, and specifically he ordered His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj to go to China. And we know that over the years, by Prabhupada's great kindness, by Mahaprabhu's mercy, there has been wonderful preaching happening in China. Even though the whole preaching is completely underground, it is not allowed officially by the government. But there's wonderful preaching happening, and there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of devotees in major cities of China receiving Krishna consciousness and flourishing in the Krishna consciousness. And as part of their yearly yatra, to really get inspiration for them to continue in China under such adverse situations, there are a group of more than 50 devotees under the leadership of His Grace Krishna Baldev Prabhu, who is our very senior Prabhupada disciple, and His Grace Chandrasekhar Prabhu, who is the GBC for the whole China region. We are very fortunate that their group of 50 devotees are here with us at Radha Gopinath Temple. And they are all sitting over there, and you know, they have come here to Shri Radha Gopinath Temple to really honestly give their association, and we should learn from them how they are doing the Krishna consciousness. But their also purpose is to interact and understand the mood of that is prevalent at Radha Gopinath Temple. So I would like to request all the devotees from China to kindly stand up so that devotees can see them. So all of us, let us with great enthusiasm, great love, and great admiration for these wonderful devotees, welcome them with great warm hearts by very loudly chanting. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj ki jai.
Actually, living here in India, so many temples of Krishna, Vishnu, you could come here anytime, any day. Tendency is to take for granted. But these devotees in China, and in the past in Russia, they have to risk their lives to follow Krishna consciousness. They could get in serious trouble with the government. They have to go underground and secretly. And they're not doing it because their parents or their grandparents have told them to do it. It's something completely new. They've come in contact with either our literature or our devotees, with Srila Prabhupada's blessing, and their hearts were so much deeply moved that they were willing to take this risk to give their lives to Krishna consciousness. And I asked one lady who's been a devotee in China for many years, Gopi Gita Devi, she's here. I said, how often do you put on a sari? She said, whenever I could come to India. We have so much to learn from these wonderful, wonderful devotees in China. And His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami, when Prabhupada ordered him to go, it was a very difficult subject. He had to go and conceive of a whole way of reaching the people. Couldn't just do Harinam in the streets or book distribution or just giving college lectures. Just staying in a hotel. And somehow or other getting people to come and teaching them in a very, very intelligent, sensitive, devotional way, making prasad for them, getting kicked out of the hotel and going to another one, dressing, growing hair long, dressing in regular clothes. But by his efforts and his devotion to Srila Prabhupada's instruction, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati asked Prabhupada to go to the West. Nobody had ever done it before. It was impossible and succeeded. But on the basis of that faith and determination, what Prabhupada did, in a very similar way, on Prabhupada's order, Jamal Krishna Goswami went to China. And now there's hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of devotees in China. And these devotees like Krishna Baladev Prabhu, Chandrasekhar Prabhu, they risk their lives there. And they're not even allowed in the country anymore. Their life and soul is to help the Chinese people, but they're not allowed. A very wonderful thing that we should all feel deeply honored and grateful that in their brief journey to India, their pilgrimage, they've chose to spend about 1 week with us here at Radha Gopinath Temple. So at this time, Sri Dama Prabhu will invite some of the Chinese devotees to come up and tell some things about how Srila Prabhupada's blessings are coming in China. I'd also like to welcome, I see my very exalted god sisters, Vishakha Devi Prabhu and Mahamaya Devi Prabhu. I see them in some distant places. Can you both please stand up? These are two of my very, very senior god sisters. Vishakha Devi is one of the closest, dearest associates of Srila Prabhupada, traveling with Prabhupada on so many occasions. Exalted lecturer, photographer, writer, mother of Rasamrita and Hari Priya Devi, and Mahamaya Devi has been stronghold of bhakti decade after decade, has a wonderful exalted son, Rasacharya Prabhu. Let us welcome these two glorious daughters of Srila Prabhupada to Radha Gopinath Temple by loudly chanting Hari Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So can I request Krishna Baldev Prabhu? Is he here? Okay. So Yudha Manu Prabhu, they will speak in Chinese and we will have Chandrasekhar Prabhu can translate for us then.
Haribol. Our actual translator is up there.
Okay.
I'm just going to do some imitation for a while. Okay. So this is Yudhamanyu Das. He is from Shanghai, which we have renamed Shantipur. The various cities in China where there are devotees, they each of them have their devotional names. So he comes from Shantipur. The capital is known as Braja. That's Beijing. And then the other major city, which is in the south, Guangzhou, I assume some of the devotees go there to do business, is known as Govardhan. All of these names were given by Tamal Krishna Maharaj and other devotees at that time. Braja.
Beijing.
Yes, Beijing. It's either Peking or Beijing. Same place, yeah. So I thought it would be much more interesting for everyone for Yudha Manyu to speak. So that's what he's going to do. And I'll paraphrase his words.
When Chakato Pias Chakripashinto Pia Ocha Paditanam Pawanepio Vasnepio Namamaha.
This is his first visit to Bombay.
然后三年以前我曾经和陈塞帕普还有其他的一些中国奉献者去了马雅普和文达文。
His first visit to India was 3 years ago. And he went to Mayapur and Vrindavan.
然后其实呢，在多年以前我就已经听说，就是有很多奉献者跟我说，就是孟买有一个非常好的庙。
Some devotees from Shanghai had visited this temple previously, and he had heard about it from them.
然后那里有非常美丽的神像，非常甜美的奉献者。
The deities are very beautiful, and the devotees are very sweet.
然后今天一早，我们在蒙古拉提的时间赶到了孟买。什么？我们今天在那个蒙古拉提的那个时间，我们赶到了孟买。
And we arrived in Bombay today during the Mongolatic time, not in the temple, but in the train station.
Yeah.
So we didn't come to see the deities this morning.
然后在天刚刚亮的时候，我看了一下这个孟买这个城市。什么？在天还没刚刚亮的时候，我看到了孟买。
As the sun rose, then of course he could see the city.
Yeah. 然后我发现，就孟买在很多方面和北京和上海很有很多类似的地方。
And he feels it's similar to Shanghai and Beijing.
但是，generally
it's said that. Mumbai is very similar to Shanghai.
Yeah.
And Calcutta is very similar to Guangzhou.
Yeah.
And of course Delhi would be more similar to Beijing.
Yeah. 但是我觉得最大的不同，我们那里没有庙宇，这里有庙。
The biggest difference is there's no temple.
这里有漂亮的神像，我们那里没有。
And no beautiful deities like here.
这里有非常甜美的奉献者。
And many.
我们那里很少.
A large group of sweet devotees. There we have a small group of sweet devotees.
所以这就是差别.
So those are the big differences.
所以这里还有很好的，guru的讲课， 还有非常丰盛的prasada.
And of course, more senior Vaishnavas here to. Lecture and give association, and of course, much more prasadam.
还有很多伟大奉献者的足迹，伟大奉献者他们走过的足迹。足迹是什么？
Oh, and she can't help herself.
所以。 我们觉得，我们有时候我们觉得非常的不幸。So
sometimes we feel very unfortunate.
但是呢，这次来了印度，我又感到我们非常幸运。
But by coming to India, by coming to the holy places, they feel very fortunate also.
就在上个星期，我们去了 Jagannath Puri.
Before we came here, we were in Jagannath Puri.
我们去了 Jagannath 庙，我们去了那个 Jagannath 的庙，但我们在门外。
We went to visit the Jagannath Temple, but of course we couldn't go inside.
然后我们在门外，在大声的 kirtan.
And we had a kirtan outside the Jagannath, the Simhadwara gate.
我们非常热烈的那种 kirtan, 深情的 kirtan, 吸引了 Jagannath 的注意。
再说。
我们的那个当时的那个kirtan, 我们在那里非常非常欢快、非常热烈的 kirtan, 我相信加格纳达已经听到了。
So the devotees had a very nice kirtan, and he felt that Lord Jagannath heard the kirtan from inside.
虽然我们没有进入这个庙
，although we couldn't go in，
但是加格纳他出来见我们了。
But Lord Jagannath came outside to see.Which is what Madhavananda keep telling us again and again and again when we were there.
所以我就那个时候我们就祈祷，在不久的将来，在中国的各个地方，在不同的城市，都有这样美丽的加格纳的庙宇。在不久的未来。
So we hope in the not too distant future we'll be able to have similar temples in the different cities of China.
所以我们来这里我们是来祈求奉献者仁慈奉献者我们的Krishna
Radha
Gopinath 的仁慈能够祈求你们给予我们所有中国人祝福
So we pray to all the devotees and to the presiding deities for all of your mercy.
虽然我们中国在过去的二十年、三十年，已经发生了非常大的变化，可以说是一种翻天覆地的这种变化。
Over the last 20 or 30 years, China has changed dramatically in many, many ways.
很多人他的生活各个方面都发生了非常大的这种生活各方面都发生了很大的变化。
The life of the Chinese people has very much changed in the last 20 or 30 years.
而且这个国家也变得越来越开放。
And the country is gradually becoming more and more open also.
那么我们也有机会能够到印度来朝圣。
For example, we're able to come to India on pilgrimage.
在印度，在中国也有越来越多的印度人到中国来旅游，来做生意。
And more and more people from India go to China for either business or traveling.
但是我们需要的是，我们需要的是对神的爱，对神的爱，对 Krishna 的爱。
我们需要。
需要的是对 Krishna 的爱。
谁需要？
我们需要的是。
But the we the devotees would want even though in other words the life has changed so much the country has changed so much etc. But we still need Krishna prema.
因为对我们来说，我们最需要的、最唯一需要的就是我们没有得到的，就是对 Krishna 的爱，对 Krishna 的 prema.
So even though the life has changed in so many ways, but The most important requirement is, of course, Krishna prema.
所以祈求所有的奉献者，如果将来你们有机会去中国的话，一定要把对 Krishna 的爱带给我们所有的中国人。
So he prays for the blessings of the devotees to help give some Krishna prema to them, the Chinese.
所以祈求神像，祈求。所有的 Vaishnava 给予中国人特别的仁慈
and to that you all pray to the deities and your own prayers to give more blessings to the Chinese people
让所有的中国的奉献者在他们未来的奉献服务当中能够面临各种各样的困难能够不断的前行克服种种的困难 毫无障碍。
That they will be able to overcome the various obstacles in their practice.
非常非常感谢。
Hari Bol。Represent the lady. The representative to say something also.
Go ahead, you say one thing. Say your inner words.
So this is Chandika. She comes from way up the northeast of China, from a place called Hegan, which is a little town way up in the northeast.
Madhuvan.
Yeah, so this place, Hegan, is the name is Madhuvan.And there's a group of perhaps 40 or 50 devotees in that particular little town.
How? You sure? 随便吧，几分钟。
我今天来到这里，真是我生生世世以来最大最大的幸运。
She feels very, very fortunate to have come here today.
首先我要感谢我的 Guru, Giridhari Swami Guru Day.
She thanks her spiritual master, Giridhari Swami.
他给我特大的仁慈和鼓励。
For giving her, so much encouragement and, mercy.
能在奉爱服务的路途上移去更多的障碍。在奉爱服务的路途上移去更多的障碍。
That in the process of bhakti yoga, there are a lot of obstacles removed. Many obstacles were removed.
我们作为中年人，应该把中国的奉献者，把中国那些沉睡的灵魂，应该唤醒。我们要做一个优秀的工具。
I didn't get that.So she said the devotees in China have the responsibility to awaken love of Krishna in the hearts of the other Chinese people.
中国虽然人口众多,
the population of China is huge.
宗教也很多,
many different sorts of religious practices.
但是修习 Krishna 知觉的人不多,
but devotees of Krishna.Are not very many.
非常非常的艰难。
艰难 means difficult. Very, very difficult.
不论以后我们遇到多大的困难和挫折。
Whatever difficulties we'll experience in the future.
我们一定要把巴格迪的奉爱传遍乡村城镇。
But we should spread, we'll continue to spread Bhakti Yoga.Everywhere and every time, however difficult it might be.
这是我们中国人的心声。
This is the Chinese people's responsibility.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, sorry. I would now like to request His Grace Chandrasekhar Prabhu, who has taken up this very Herculean task of being the governing boarding commissioner, the GBC for this region of China. And he is a very, very enthusiastic preacher. He has been debarred from China. He is not allowed to go to China, but sitting in other places, he is remote controlly managing the whole preaching in China. So I'd like to hear from him how he does it.
I was hoping that wouldn't happen. Actually, I don't do very much. With such a big country, you can't really do very much. Most of what is done by the local devotees in the various parts of the country. And myself and the other overseas devotees who serve there, then we just try to help where we can and to maybe offer some coordination and some encouragement and guidance and so on and so forth. But as you know, as we say in English, the sky's the limit. China is such a huge country. I mean, it has 1.3 billion people. Although I understand India is going to overtake it in numbers by the year 2030 or something like that. But it's such a vast country, and there will always probably be somewhere for the next 100 or 200 years where you would be pioneering. And we've really, most of the devotees are along the eastern coast of the country. There's still the west, the hinterland, which is vast and huge, and you know, many of the provinces have more population than whole countries, most countries in the world. So it's really the sky is the limit as far as service opportunities are available. So if you want a service opportunity, you can sign up. long-term service opportunity. And of course, the devotees, like anywhere in the world, they need a lot of mature senior guidance and help, and it's the same there. There is an advantage in not having temples, because as Maharaj was saying earlier, when you don't have something so easily, then you tend to value it quite a bit more. And you're not doing it because it's easy. You're not doing it because your grandparents told you so. You're not doing it because your friends encouraged you. You're doing it because you're doing it because you feel you have to do it. You have to practice the process of devotional service. So as is the case with the devotees from that part of the world, they don't really have any social support. Very rarely do they have any family support. They definitely don't have any official support. But still they do it. They come to Krishna consciousness because they're very much convinced that this is what needs to be done. And not having temples, again, helps to make them value more what they're able to get, because they can get so little, so they're much more, in a way, eager to get what they're able to get, even if it's not very much. And it's always a pleasure, of course, to serve with such devotees who have simple hearts and who are very sincere. But like any country in the world, it also has, and after all, we're all human. So there's a long, long way to go. And of course, I'm very thankful that I'm able to serve there. And I pray to the devotees and to the deities that I can continue serving there in the future. Thank you. We do have another devotee who should speak, but his voice is not working, so he can't. And that's Krishna Baladev Prabhu. He's probably sitting around here somewhere. He's also been serving in the yatra for over 20 years. Is he? Where is he? He's in the back. There he is. He's also serving in the yatra. He's been serving in the yatra with his wife for over 20 years, Mother Swasti. And in spite of all, again, difficulties and obstacles, you know, we don't have a temple in, devotees who serve don't have a temple environment. You have to wear non-devotional clothing all of the time. And you have to make do with what you have. And the overseas devotees who serve there, and there's a handful of them, they're all self-financed, they're, you know, so Prabhu has been serving in that way for the last 20 years also. And the devotees, in affectionate terms, he's known for the, among the Chinese devotees, he's known as Ashu, which means uncle. So he's the uncle of our devotees there and has been for so many years. And of course, they all love him very much, as we all do. And we're very thankful that we have such surrendered devotees, in spite of everything, who remain there serving year after year, not for their own personal comforts, but in order to help the Chinese devotees and to spread Krishna consciousness there. So he would be speaking, but his voice isn't working due to the air-conditioned trains. So you give a clap to him also. One more thing, and whilst we're all here, whilst all the devotees are here, as you are able, please give them your association, although it might be hard to find a translator, because not all of them speak English, but you can try sign language and a few hugs and kisses and all that sort of thing. Mostly, as you notice, most of the group are ladies, so there's more service for the lady devotees. But if you could do that when they're here, give them a few hugs and kisses and so on, I'm sure they'll be very appreciative and happy if you did that.
Hare Krishna. Personally, it was very inspiring and very uplifting to be here amongst all these devotees who have come from China. And to hear and to understand a little bit about the sacrifice that is required just to practice Krishna consciousness, what to speak about trying to spread Krishna consciousness, which is even more so. Radhanath Maharaj mentioned how, you know, also in Russia, similar circumstances were similar with the oppression and having to go underground, having to keep one's identity somewhat very much secret in both practice and the different people you meet, not knowing who you're meeting. But we see, and history has a tendency to repeat itself, that by the determination and the conviction that comes by way of the practice of Krishna consciousness and becomes solidified in the association of similar-minded devotees, that the social and political situation has a tendency to change, which is Krishna's arrangement when to allow the devotees to be able to preach more freely and to practice more freely. So it's a Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's very, very eager to bring every soul to Krishna consciousness. His enthusiasm is pushing his devotees to do whatever they can to practice, to purify their hearts and to preach Krishna consciousness. And we see when more and more cultures, more and more people from different types of backgrounds, lifestyles, which sometimes are so completely different from ours, come together as brothers and sisters in one family, we can see how amazing it is that what is Krishna consciousness, how it transcends all these material designations, material conditionings. And Srila Prabhupada would proudly say that this is the real United Nations. He would say, referring to the material United Nations, how they're trying to bring countries together under one banner of unity, but it's complete failure because it's simply based on, we say, bodily desires, activities. It's complete failure. But when we come to the practice of devotional service, we transcend all these differences and we actually come to the platform of unity, and that is to work together, to cooperate together, and to serve the Lord in devotional service. And how, when that unity becomes strong, how deep it takes root within the soul, and how one is willing to do whatever is required to serve the spiritual master and to spread Krishna consciousness. I was really, although I heard the translations, I also was listening very carefully to the devotees as they were speaking in their language, and I could sense from their hearts and from their words that there's a real sense of conviction that comes by way of their practice. And this is glorious. And as Maharaj said, we can all learn from these devotees about what it means to be a devotee in such a difficult circumstance, and how that difficulty, in one sense, brings out such good qualities of a Vaishnava, that they're willing to risk their lives for their practice and to spread Krishna consciousness to others. So we thank the devotees for coming here and to inspire us all, and we hope, of course, this is the ideal place to come to get Vaishnava association, Vaishnav's, what we say, friendship. And I know you'll be taken care of very nicely by the devotees under the guidance of Radhanath Swami. So please, thank you all for coming, and we hope we can serve you in some way or other. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.